Good morning. We are going to call the Human Services Health and Education Committee meeting to order for October 6th. Paul, would you lead us in the pledge, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Just a couple of items for housekeeping. Please make sure you turn your microphones on if you're speaking so that the call-in people can hear you. Also, budget books are available in the office and please pick them up. Okay. We have approval of the minutes for September 1st and September 27th.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Moves. Okay, Dr. Chapman.
Good morning, everybody.
I've got two
budget adjustments. First one is from the State Office, Alcohol and Substance Abuse. We recently received $6,905 from State Oasis for cost of living adjustment. So I'm looking to get your approval to accept the funding and
join the meeting.
And pass the money on to our service providers as listed.
I make a motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any questions? Those opposed? Motion carries.
Great, thank you. Second one has to do from State Office of Mental Health. We recently received $23,721 from State OMH for COLA. So I'm looking to get your approval to accept that funding and pass it on to the service providers as listed.
I make a motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Any questions? Motion carries. Thank you.
Great, thank you.
Darlene, Sheen.
Yep.
Good morning, Darlene.
Good morning.
About now, there. Just a couple of asking for a couple of approvals this morning. The first one is to enter into a contract with another speech language pathologist, Brittany Williams. She lives in Rochester, and it would be at the same rates that we pay everyone else.
I'll move it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Any questions? Motion carries. Thank you.
Okay. Yep. Thank you. And then I do have a request to for three different purchasing contracts and agreements. All three of the, I'll explain each one, but all three of them will be paid for, and they all fall under the ELC, the screening testing grant for schools that all counties received late this summer. And the first one is with Quadrant Bioscience, and that's the laboratory in Syracuse. That has the self-administered saliva swab test, and that is to meet the weekly mandate that schools have to test all unvaccinated faculty, and it will be a pooled testing. We needed to, within the contract itself, they asked for an estimate of how many kits we would use throughout the entire school year. So that's why you see 40,000 test kits at $20 each comes out to $800,000. Do we do these all together or?
You could do them together if you want. Just to clarify, this would be ratifying approval of these contracts because we already actually executed them under our emergency purchases because to get them up and going, we needed to get it done before this meeting.
Thank you. And then with Ginkgo Bioworks, the rapid antigen tests can also be used in schools to test those who present with symptoms, faculty, staff. We had also placed an order with Abbott for the Binax cards. but really felt like we needed to have more capacity for that. And we were able to get some quicker through Ginkgo Bioworks. It's basically, it's a rapid antigen test, but it's just on it's still a nasal swab. And we ordered 12,800 of those at $550 each, comes out to $70,400. And they'll be distributed to schools, you know, as they need them. We're trying to give them about a month's supply at a time. But throughout the year, we will distribute these as well as the Abbott Binax cards. And then the last one is with Trusted Nurse Staffing. This is a temp agency in Buffalo, and they have nurses. And the schools understandably expressed concern that they were not going to have the capacity of, for their school nurses to administer all of these saliva swab tests for the unvaccinated faculty, because I think I maybe mentioned to you previously, across the county with all the districts combined, there's approximately 1,000 unvaccinated faculty and staff that are going to have to be tested every single week. So we were able to secure two travel nurses through Trusted Nurse Staffing, and I basically split the county in half. And so each nurse will go to a different school district each day of the week to help augment the school's capacity to test all of their unvaccinated staff.
We have a motion.
Second.
Any questions?
Question, this is all paid for by?
Yeah, we received approximately $2.8 million from the federal government, passed through the state government. It was under the ARPA Act. They allocated a significant sum for testing in schools to keep schools open and kids in schools.
Okay, my only question is did the state collect some of it passing through, or did they give us all of it?
We received all that was allocated to us. Okay. Now, if they took any admin, you know, out of the pot, but if
we were awarded that amount, I just wondered if we really got that from the state, if they didn't claim onto some of it through way through.
No, that we're.
Do you have a question?
Yes. Sure, Hilda.
Are they getting tested? The staff of 1,000
Hilda. Hilda, turn your microphone on, please.
Of course they do. I always have something interesting to say. Are they getting tests once a week?
Yes.
And what was you probably said this, but I didn't understand. What was the difference between the testing kits that are $20?
Yep.
And the rapid testing that's $5.
Yep, there's a big difference actually. So the Quadrant Bioscience, the pooled testing kits, those are self-administered saliva swabs. So the unvaccinated faculty will come down to the nurse's office, and they will insert the saliva swab in between their gum and their cheek, you know, swab, put it in a little vial, and then pools of 12 will be sent to Quadrant for them to test those samples. The Ginkgo Bioworks is a rapid antigen test. It's the nasal test. It's not the kind that goes all the way to the back of your head. It only goes up a little ways in your nostril. Very, very similar to the Binax cards that we have and have been using for a year now. But we just, very slow shipment on those because there's such high demand for those. So we were able to find out about Ginkgo Bioworks and the Access Care Start cards, very similar, just a different type of a rapid antigen test that the school nurses will be able to have on hand to utilize for, you know, at noon when a student or a faculty comes down with a sniffle to the nurse's office.
So is the poop, so when there's a group of 12, and I think you probably told us this before.
That's okay.
If one of the 12 is positive.
Yes. So how that works is the pool of 12 is overnight shipped to Syracuse. They will test that pool. If that pool pops positive, then they take each individual saliva swab from that pool and test the saliva swab individually to find out who in that pool is positive. So they don't have to, the 12 in the pool don't have to retest. Their sample is already at the lab, and the lab has a process that they test it together first. If it's negative, great. But if it pops positive, then they take each individual saliva swab out and test that to find out who it is.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Darlene, some of my constituents are concerned about the accuracy of these tests. I met with people last week about the whole vaccine thing. Are any of these more accurate than others? And is the accuracy level of any of them inaccurate enough to be a concern?
So the saliva swabs are actually a diagnostic test because they're laboratory confirmed. So that's highly, highly accurate. The rapid antigen test, both Binax as well as the Ginkgo Access Care Start, I mean, they're not as reliable as a diagnostic test. They're more reliable when you're testing someone with symptoms. Then picking up an asymptomatic positive, they're not as reliable for that, for sure. Those who have symptoms, the schools are using them primarily with someone who has no known exposure. So again, if somebody should go to the nurse's office at noon with just a sniffle and no known exposure, that's the ideal time to use those rapid antigen tests. Because if you are positive, if you have symptoms and it comes back negative with the rapid antigen test, it is recommended, especially if there's a known exposure, to go ahead and get a diagnostic test. So it's not as reliable, but they're pretty good. And they're really pretty good.
We've used the rapid antigen test quite a bit, and we haven't seen, just in our experience, the false positives, but you can see false negatives essentially. And that's what the literature shows. There's about a 12 to 18 hour window prior, if you're positive prior to exhibiting a lot of symptoms, that if you use a rapid antigen test, it might not pick it up. But it really, because it's detecting the SARS-CoV-2 protein in your nose. And so we haven't seen really the false positives. We have seen some false negatives of people a few hours prior to a lot of symptoms. They're not caught with the rapid antigen test. They certainly would be caught with the PCR test, though.
Yes.
I think that that's what they were insinuating too. More false positives than
being.
No, we're not seeing that.
No, that would be rare, I think.
So let me go back to the 1,000 people. Is that across the whole county?
It is.
All the districts.
They gave me their numbers of how many unvaccinated faculty they had at the beginning of the school year. And so that's how we arrived at needing 40,000 for the entire school year.
So what's the percentage of people then? I don't know how many people are in there.
It depends by school district.
Yeah.
Some are very, very high
mm-hmm.
In terms mm-hmm. of their vaccination rate. Some are not as much. I'd say between 10, 20 maybe.
I think that's a fair estimate. I think, hopefully
probably more than that, probably 20. Yeah.
Yeah.
So are we going to try to get them vaccinated? Whatever.
Doing. Yep. I think as time goes, as the weeks go by this year, maybe they'll grow tired of being tested and then just go ahead and get vaccinated. We're still offering a weekly vaccination clinic at Civil Defense every single Friday from 10 to 2. Last Friday, we vaccinated approximately 70 people, and about 30 of those was for the booster.
The only other thing to note is that with this pooled testing, the other thing in the state requirements that the schools, and again, it's murky language, so we'll see how the schools want to do it. They've all committed that they're going to get this started with their unvaccinated staff. And then there's requirement. They have to make testing available to anyone in the school district who wants it. So a vaccinated staff person or children with parents' consent have to have the ability to be tested regularly at the school. And that our discussion with them is the pool testing is perfect for that because that's a very non-invasive kind of thing. That way they're not sending them, across town for something. They're meeting those. So it actually over time might expand the pooled testing to vaccinated staff and students whose parents opt in or want their children to be part mm-hmm. of pooled testing, but that's just a heads up on that. And we certainly have more than enough ELC funds to accomplish that.
Yes, we do. And some districts are already telling us that they're getting requests from their vaccinated faculty and even some parents allowing their student to be tested in the pool testing. So I do think it's just going to grow throughout the year.
Thank you.
Since we're on this topic, and I might as well just get this conversation out now because I did tell him.
Put your microphone over closer so those people on the line can hear you.
Yeah.
It's on. There, it's on.
On.
Gotta turn it on.
No, it's on.
It was on. But
the red light was on. There it is.
It's yeah. on, Paul.
Yeah. I tried three microphones this morning.
Don't
worry.
I don't need it.
So I did tell this group that I would address it at the meeting. I think one of the big concerns is, and I know it's still kind of early in the procedure for this, but their argument is that the vaccine may not be as efficient or as effective as what, you know, the government is suggesting. And, you know, wanted to know if we had any numbers, concrete numbers, other than people just saying, well, I didn't get it, I got it, you know, I got COVID, or the guessing, you know, like we're doing here. Is there any studies in place, or will they be doing any studies? Are we putting those models together at some point?
Well, so do you mean in relation to like breakthrough infections?
Well, yeah. So, you know, this person got this vaccine and they were either reinfected with COVID or, you mm-hmm. know, or not.
Mm-hmm.
And
so, I mean, locally, I can tell you that we do track that data. We each time we put out a release Monday, Wednesday, Friday, we list how many breakthrough infections out of that report's number of new positive cases. So we do track that locally. We also try to track which vaccine it was, whether it was Pfizer, Moderna, or J&J. At this time, we can't really say that one has a higher rate of breakthrough infection than another right now. You know, I do think they're starting to track that a little bit better at the state level and at the national level, because New York State Department of Health just added to their website a breakthrough data link on their website, so that it doesn't break it down by county, but it shows for the state. So I think we've been doing it since the beginning, but New York State is starting to do it now. And I assume that they are nationally, so that, you know, more attention can be paid to that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions for Darlene?
I would just make a comment. I think the whole messaging around this thing for the last year and a half has been haphazard by the state, by the federal government. I'm not saying by us, because we're basically following what they say. But there's a lot of hesitation of people to get vaccinated because they see people that have been vaccinated are still getting it.
Mm-hmm.
And the message that they need to hear is the ones that have been vaccinated that then get it, don't get it as severe.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the part that's missing is
mm-hmm.
they're equating, well, you know, Joe Schmo down the street got vaccinated and he's got it again. So why should I get vaccinated? I mean, that's the selling point that needs to be made is mm-hmm. you're not going to get it as severe. You're not going to be in the hospital for it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. That is an important point that I know locally, we do try to emphasize, and, you know, not that we haven't had breakthrough infections end up being hospitalized or even passing, but those who have passed, they've got other comorbidity things going on that have certainly contributed to that. So by and large, you are absolutely right. Those who are vaccinated, it keeps them out of the hospital and it keeps them from dying by and large.
Go ahead. I think that's the numbers they want to see is, you know, how many are getting reinfected, are dying compared to the ones who don't have the vaccine. And I know these numbers just don't happen overnight. But another big concern is the new technology of the RNA vaccine versus the old technology, which I understand the Johnson & Johnson is available as well, but not as available as the other ones. So, you know, people are saying that these spike proteins, you know, stick to tissues in your body and who knows where they go for years. And these are the things, not necessarily, these are my personal opinions. This is what my constituents are bringing to me. And I don't know how to answer those because I don't even know if we do know the answers to those yet.
Well, I think that's certainly evolving. I mean, I think that research is constantly being conducted and I think that information is evolving, but each time that we put out a release, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, we do say out of those who are hospitalized, how many of them are vaccinated? And it's either none or a very low number.
Okay.
So we try to make that known.
What we've done is to message you know, because we were following a lot of the CDC and the DOH messaging on that. And what we've deferred to since the summertime, if not before, I mean, we were saying it before, but is talk to your doctor. You know, that's right. That's your trusted medical source. Yeah. Don't rely on Facebook or Instagram or your neighbor next door. Talk to your doctor. And, you know, generally, once you have that conversation, I mean, sometimes depending upon, you know, a person's history of maybe adverse, you know, side effects from the vaccine, maybe it's not for them. But by and large, you know, the primary cares that we've talked to a lot,
yeah,
have said, yep, you're good to go. It'll certainly protect you. So.
Well, I had spoken to Darlene about us maybe changing our messaging a little bit in regard to just general information on how to boost your immune system. And if you think about it, the flu shot is really no guarantee that you're not going to get the flu either. And if we can try to somehow gain back some trust in the system itself, I think that's where the problem is, and people get a mindset about a particular item and they're just dead set against it. And maybe if we tone down and you boost your immune system by washing your hands, visiting your doctor, exercising, do your research and consider getting the vaccine. If we knock it down the totem pole, we may very well accomplish what it is we want without people feeling like it's being jammed down their throats. I think most people will come around.
Hilda, you had a question.
Yeah, I just wanted to note that.
Thank you for reminding me. When I look at the numbers that were published on Monday, these still are alarming numbers. 10.83% positivity rate. We have now 210 people that have died. That is very sad in this county. And it's not going down, it's going up. So I don't know what the messaging is, but
Jack and I were talking about this yesterday, you know, through the meetings that, you know, me talking with my counterparts in other counties, other public health directors, and the Finger Lakes and Southern Tier Control calls that we've had. Other counties aren't seeing the numbers that we're seeing. But I think part of it is our low vaccination rate. You know, we're at 59.4% of those 18 and older in the county have been vaccinated, but you know, the total population, we're at 49.6. So, I mean, that's low. If you compare it to the counties around us, especially Ontario, I mean, they have a great vaccination rate, and they're not seeing anywhere near the numbers that we are. So for example, this past weekend, we had 222 new positive cases. Ontario County had 36.
So what are they doing that's working for them?
I think vaccination rate has a lot to do with it. A lot. They have many more who are vaccinated.
What are they doing to get these people vaccinated?
Well,
knock on the door.
Nothing different than we are. I think a big part of it is a lot of Ontario County folks, you know, work in Monroe and Rochester. And so there's that urban overlap. And so it's, you know, there's a little different mindset in the urban setting than there is the rural settings. And
all you do is make them aware of the risk, and then the people make their own decisions. Yeah.
It's certainly not due to lack of accessibility. You know, it was in February and March, because we were begging for vaccine, and they would give me 200 doses a week. we didn't get very many people vaccinated that way, but now, you know, it is not only readily accessible in terms of inventory, but clinics. I mean, I'm only running one clinic a week, but honestly, that's all we need right now. If I see the rate of interest increase for booster doses, I'll gladly add on a larger clinic, a second or third clinic to accommodate that. But when I have 30 people come last Friday for a booster out of 70,
you know, we had this conversation back when we were still at the OC and doing the vaccination hub calls. And, you know, UHS was running that, and no, it's not a disparaging comment towards UHS, but they're not involved in the public health world, and they certainly are not involved in the counties out this way. You know, they're a Binghamton, Broome County organization. And they, one day on the phone, looked at us and said, you know, your rates are so low, Tompkins County's are so high, you know, let's learn from Tompkins County. Tompkins, what are you doing well? And to the credit of the public health director in Tompkins, he goes, I'm not doing anything different than all of the counties on this phone. He goes, it's just a different demographic.
Yep.
That's what it comes down to.
Yep.
Any other?
I've had people tell me that, you know, they don't want to get vaccinated. And I said, well, that's your choice. But I remember when I was a youngster in school, they lined everybody up and they gave us vaccinations for polio and smallpox. How many people do you know today that's getting polio? How many people do you know today it's getting smallpox?
Yep.
And the only reason they're not getting them is today is because of a vaccination.
That's right.
So I tell people, get vaccinated. If, you know, and I had a friend a week ago, wouldn't get vaccinated. He died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just one more point. And another committee I'm on our board, the question was, well, what do we incentivize? How do we incentivize these people to get vaccinated? My comment was, the incentive is they keep their job. And if they don't want to keep their job,
that's what it's come down to now.
Keep their job or not.
That's what it's come down to now. I mean, and I don't think there's an incentive. If somebody's vaccine hesitant and doesn't want to get it, there's not an incentive in the world that's going to entice them to do it, including their job. You know, we've already seen that. I mean, the state, they had the lottery going for a while, you know, $1 million lottery ticket and, you know, free college education. That that didn't really increase the vaccination rates all that much.
Oh, we tried different, I mean, we talked about it. We've gone to churches, we've gone to breweries, we've gone to wineries, we've gone to all these places to, you know, meet people where they're at, mm-hmm. and nothing has changed. I mean, our biggest clinics are still the mass vaccination clinics because we had such a large group that wanted it with a small demand. I mean, those are when we did it. I mean, we've tried, I can't tell you how many conversations we've had about different approaches to try to increase it. And unfortunately, I think we're just at the point, like you've all have said, that if you want it, you're going to get it. If not, you're not.
Yeah, that's what's come down
questions?
To.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Thank you.
Thanks, Darlene.
You're welcome.
Good morning, Patty.
Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
Mine always seems so white bread compared to Darlene's. today, I need approval to accept unmet need funding for 2021-22. This was information was not available when we did our budget originally. There's no match. And so we want to use $51,250 in 2021 and reserve the rest of it for 2022. The bulk of it will go into the contracts listed below, but we also are going to put a little bit in ramps and a little bit in program development for chronic pain management.
I make the motion.
Go ahead.
You made the
motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Carried.
Okay, my next item is to increase Comfort Keepers contract by $10,000. That's personal care level one, which is housekeeping. This unmet need funding is making it available to serve some of the people that were not being served. So I just need approval to increase that contract.
Do we have a motion?
I'll move it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Next one is Center for Elder Law and Justice. That's our legal contract out of Buffalo. They had a contract for $5,000 and they spent all of it. And when they run out of money, they make every effort to give us in-kind service. But with this new funding, we were able to allocate $5,000 to increase their contract, and they feel confident that they can spend it by the end of the year.
I make the motion.
A second?
I'll second it with a question. This isn't setting precedent that we're going to move their contract per year from 5 to 10, does it?
I don't think so. It's a discussion that we have every year, and there's no question of the need. And as you know, the money has been more plentiful this year, so we're allowed to do that. But I think they do have the understanding that there's a finite amount of money available. And when we sharpen our pencils for the budget, we just look at where the greatest need is.
Yeah, I would say it's based on need use, but also with if the point comes, and it will eventually, where we're not so infused with federal or state dollars, then it's the balancing act during the budget of how much you appropriate.
And it's all in writing, it's all in contract, and it's just for that term, so we could change it each year.
Okay, I just wouldn't want us locking in on something. Mm-hmm. That's all.
All right, any other questions? We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Okay, the next item is Corning Meals on Wheels. We want to increase their contract $10,000 with this unmet need funding.
I make the motion.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Any questions, Hilda?
So not a question, but a comment that
this is huge for Corning Meals on Wheels. It really is. So I'm really glad that we're able to do that for them.
Right. They're always appreciative, and I know it's needed. They do a very nice program. And, you know, certainly with the COVID pandemic, they've had an added burden, and they just rise to the occasion every time there's a new need. Thank you.
We have a motion and a second. Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Okay, next one is the IHS employment contract. We've had an uptick in the work for case management just because of the infusion of new money and the added demand because of the pandemic. So we need a temporary case management worker to cover in for short staff. So we'd like to increase that contract by $13,750.
We have a motion.
Is this part-time, or is this going to be a regular county employee?
No,
it's a benefits to it, or
sorry, this is a contracted employee. They're full-time, so they do get benefits, but it's time limited.
They wouldn't be on our, they're not on our insurance, so whatever the contract cost is the all-in cost for those services.
Okay.
We have a motion.
Do we? I'll make it.
Okay. Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
My last item, I'm withdrawing. We put the van out for bid 3 times and didn't get anything suitable. We're just kind of tabling that, and the money will need to be spent. This is ISIP dollars, home care dollars, that need to be spent by March 31st of 2022. So we're just going to take a step back and look and see where the best use of that money is. There were some additional items that we were using those dollars for equipment-wise that will be on our equipment list.
Thank you. Hilda?
Patty, what's the problem? Is it so special that that doesn't sound like it should be a problem.
I was naive going into it. The only requirement that we had was we wanted stow-and-go seats, because if they use this for home-delivered meals delivery, they need the cargo space. But you may recall we talked about retaining ownership of the vehicle through the county. So if we took that vehicle back, we would probably need the seats for moving people. So that's the only stipulation that we had, but it is not available. I don't really understand the market. We put it out twice, and then we put it out for open bid, and there was just nothing. There was one nibble, but they said it might be 6 to 8 months before we could get a vehicle, and this money would expire. So
it's the national global shortage based on, it's really the computer chips that are slow in processing. So if you go buy almost any lot right now, I mean, they're starting to trickle back in, but it's slow go.
Ask for extension on that? On that
mic? This is an extension, okay. So we can try, but I don't. We're trying to get it spent. There's plenty of need. It just is a matter of figuring out where it can be spent wisely.
All right. Any other questions? Okay. Well, this is tabled then.
Thank you.
Thanks, Patty. Morning, Nate.
Good morning.
Okay, I have just one item this morning. The Office of Community Services, you know, we frequently look at positions as they become vacant and make sure they're classified appropriately. We're asking to reclassify a senior stenographer to a principal clerk. More adequately describes the duties of the position, and stenographers kind of phasing out, so.
Yeah, there's a few titles. Nate, obviously it's his call, but we've worked with departments that for where we have kind of onesie twosies titles and the duties justify, we try to consolidate into something where we'll actually get a decent list, because if you have one or two positions and you don't know when this test is going to be listed again, it's sometimes difficult to recruit. So if the titles fit and, you know, it's the same grade, it just makes a little more sense.
So is there a difference in the pay rate?
No, it's the same grade and everything.
Second. Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nate. Okay, next we have the Stuben Prevention Coalition request for ARPA funding for $8,457. I sent everyone information about that. So what is your choice on that?
Second.
Question?
So can Colleen Bannock just say a few words about sure. that effort?
Yes. Turn your phone on. There you go.
Okay. We did submit a proposal to the county for the ARPA funding, and we did submit it to send two youth and two adult chaperones, hopefully their parents, to this national conference for annual youth leadership. The youth right now are an essential, well, always, but they are an essential part of our building process in the prevention field. And we are finding more and more that the youth are listening to youth, and a lot more adults are listening to youth than listening to other adults just preach to them about data and statistics and whatnot. I've been to this conference with the youth and experienced this, and they do come back and they become leaders in our prevention field. We have government leadership youth and whatnot. We need these youth to be prevention leaders in Steuben County. I can read off some data to you where we're increasing in marijuana use, alcohol use, even heroin and opioids. And in a lot of the categories, Steuben County is above the national average for use in these substances. And it starts as low as eighth grade. And if we surveyed more, even down into sixth grade, we would probably find some of that as well. So I'm willing to answer any questions relative to this, but our goal is to have these youth go school to school and do peer messaging, go community to community and do youth to adult messaging, and as well as making sure that we have a consistent message with our youth throughout Steuben County as to what they should and shouldn't be doing.
Any questions for Colleen? Jeff?
Are the youth that you are...
Jeff, your microphone, please.
Are the youth that will be chosen to go, are they ones that are actually in the percentage that are using these types of drugs or alcohol?
Currently, the first choice is not a user of these substances that I am aware of. She is a ninth grade student out of Canisteo Greenwood. And she is also our youth sector representative. She's been very active. The goal to recruit for the second person, we certainly could use that as a guideline for recruitment for the second student.
I just think it might be more beneficial if you had someone that was in that group of people interested in going, because I think if you have a person that's already not chosen that lifestyle, their friends aren't in that lifestyle, and I have a hard time believing that a ninth grader is just going to go to some party where they're using this and start giving a
sermon
to get them to stop. They might do it in a gymnasium, but half the gymnasium sitting there saying, you know, look at this person. I mean, I'm just being the devil's advocate.
No, I understand what you're saying. And we do recognize that. And when we're trying to gather these students together, even for our community events and whatnot, and for the Youth Action Forum, we try to get the school districts to send us a wide range of students, and not necessarily your students who are in their government leadership programs, high society or high honor society and all that. We want a wide range, and we do want to reach the ones that are currently not active in anything, because they seem to be, and not to say that even these high honor students and whatnot aren't currently using. We know some of our athletes are doing the same thing. It's just a matter of, for lack of a better way to put it, they have a little bit more protection than our underprivileged kids. So we are trying to address that with the school districts. Please offer up a wide range of students when we go to these things. I personally think the ones who are currently using would be your best advocates as well.
Kelly?
It would be more like they would be going from school to school, and our goal is to create youth groups, not where they're going to a gymnasium and presenting to a bunch of kids, but to go school to school and create youth groups where they meet on a regular basis and they talk and they recruit these other kids to come and tell them what they're seeing, what's going on, and then come back to us and say, this is what we're hearing, this is what we're seeing, this is what we're being told, and how are we going to address it? How are we going to help these kids? So that is a big part of our goal.
Kelly?
I just want to make a few comments that I think that I don't see where this is not a good opportunity for those two students. I think it would be a great resume builder for those two students. But I think that the battle against drug use and abuse is kind of like fighting a fire alarm fire with a bucket. And even with those bad odds, it's a fight that we still have to continue on with. But I also think that we need to challenge our outside agencies to bring us great ideas. I said high school hasn't changed so substantially over the years, and I don't think that kids that are outside of their personal clique will have tremendous influence over others in their own school, let alone if we send a ninth grader from Canisteo to Haverling. I just don't see where they'll have that great influence. I think that the ARPA funds are the opportunity for us to plant seeds of great ideas. I've asked the Youth Bureau to reach out to youth centers for other ideas, and I'd like to see you take this back to the coalition and come up with a great idea rather than just a good one.
Any other questions or comments? Bob?
My question is, a ninth grader, if she's in school, he or she, whoever, if they got their regular studies, how are they going to have time to leave their school to go to, say, Haverling or Corning or wherever, Addison? How is she going to keep up on her grades if she's running around doing that? You see what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying. It's not necessarily place during school hours. There are opportunities for them to do this after school.
But your audience is going to be way down after school, unless you're just going to have her speak to the ones that are held after school for detention or something. You know, you see what I'm saying? Because your students, most of them leave right after school. They get out of there. But I'm not opposed to the program. I'm just seeing how it's really going to work. That's my question.
Hilda?
So, sorry. One of the things that we had talked about was there's a new youth center in Bath that's going to be coming up. We have a youth center in Corning. These people can go to those centers. They have a captive audience. It's after school.
Okay.
And I think there are clubs at schools that are after school. Some are in school, but not sure if they can get to them. But we would work that out. I mean, it would be we do our student governments, and that seems to work. This is sort of the same. It's leadership building, but it's also sharing the information to hopefully help kids that are on the border of whether they're going to do it or not, and those kids that are doing it.
Oh, I think the program's good. I just was seeing how it was going to work. I mean, Addison has a youth center after school too.
Yeah, and Addison, yes, yes. They have a great youth center.
Yeah, but, you know, I was just wondering how the student was going to have time to do it, the two students, and how they were going to get to the...
Well, we as a coalition will be actively involved in assisting them as well. We wouldn't just put them out there on their own. Yeah. We would be their resource. We would be their funding needs.
They're going to have leadership or guidance.
Absolutely.
And their parents, if it's parents that are going with them to this, their parents are having to pay for the conference fee as well, because they're participating in it as well. So they will be, if we get the right people, they will be supporters for their children. Because they'll understand what's going on.
Good. I just felt we needed this conversation. How it was
work. It's good.
John?
Yes. How are these training sessions funded before?
They haven't been.
They haven't gone.
So this would be the initial?
It would be for the coalition. We have requested funding through outside agencies in the past to do this, but we've only been given small amounts, which would require additional money coming from the coalition, which we did not have at the time.
But your coalition has sent people to this training.
We have sent adults. We have sent adults, and this past year, since everything's been virtual, we actually sent 7 in the last one, not adults, not youth. And it is not necessarily a requirement, but it is a goal of the drug-free communities grants that you send youth to these conferences, these leadership programs.
I went, was it 2 years ago? Two years ago, and it was a really amazing conference. Mm-hmm. To see all these kids.
Kelly?
I would wonder if the peer advocate who goes out and does the OD mapping might be a better advocate for some of these types of programs, because he is someone who's been in that world, understands it, and is trying to reach out to people that are still living in that world. And if they reached out to the youth centers rather than another youth, if that might be more effective. I just don't feel that this is... I feel like we'll have better impact with someone other than a student, and I would not be in favor of this.
We currently are using that particular peer advocate, and he is a member of our opioid committee. Actually, he is the chairman, and we do utilize him, and he attends probably 90% of our functions and does exactly that. The drug-free communities grant is focused on youth 12 to 18 years old, and that's what they require us to focus on. And we're getting more and more over the last couple of years that the youth to youth message needs to get out there, and it needs to start early.
Well, but you're asking for different funds, not those drug, you're not using that grant money to facilitate this program. You want us to use the ARPA money for it. So you don't have to follow those grant requirements if you're getting the funding from us to send someone to this training.
Any other questions? Do we have a motion?
We did.
Yeah.
Sorry. In a second.
I apologize. Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you. Okay, next one we have is the Steuben Opioid Prevention Committee. They're requesting $4,570 for the dispose of the packets for the prescriptions. and the medication lock boxes and printing costs. So the total is $4,570. Do we have a motion?
This is budgeted, right?
No, it's a grant.
ARPA. This ARPA. Would be out of your ARPA
funds. ARPA funds.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
I'll second it to get it on the table.
Any questions?
Is these are lock boxes for parents that's got kids that want to get into the drugs on them? Is that what the idea is? Or where's these lock boxes? Are they going to be at people's homes? Or what's going on?
I think, Hilda, you've always
talked about this. So for all of what you just said, yes. And we have been distributing them to realtors so that when they have open houses, they can have the medicines locked up, because we found that people are stealing medicine out of people's homes. And maybe Mike can add to that. But there's a number of people who've asked for lock boxes. We bought a bunch for what we can afford in our budget, but we want to do more and give those out as freebies. And the other part of it is those packets, and I brought them to the legislators before, to safely dispose of your medicine so it doesn't go in the sewer system. Those packets are fairly expensive, and we have been giving them out at the fair, and we give them out to a number of people. We were at the big event at the fairgrounds the other 2 weeks ago, and handed them out to people who were talking about addiction, et cetera. So those are very expensive things that we want to hand out to the community, because we know there's a need for it. And that's why we're asking for the money.
How are we doing on our funding for, this is part of that grant we got, of half of it we have to spend in certain ways.
Right.
Am I following this right?
Right. So far you have the full legislature has approved $130,000.
Out of how much?
18.6 million. Nine of which is restricted. So you've spent 130 out of your 9 million.
This would be under the restricted or not under the restricted?
I would say, so if we claim it as restricted, we have to go through a lot of hoops. And while there is a connection between the pandemic and drug use, that's for this amount of money, I'd suggest if you approve it, that it come from unrestricted. So, and you all recall, and we're working on it, getting RFPs back for construction manager and RFP, but the big chunk of that unrestricted so far, based upon your discussions, is those handful of construction projects we talked about.
So we still have money for
it. You still have money.
I just wanted to know where it was coming from and
where
we stand.
I just have one question about the lock boxes. I guess I don't understand them. I buy and sell a lot of properties, and if I am selling my property.
Jeff, could you turn your microphone on?
I said I don't understand the lock boxes and giving away lock boxes. I sell a lot of properties myself, and if I have prescription drugs in there, I'm afraid of somebody stealing. Why wouldn't I just take them away for the day of the open house or after the house is sold? Do these boxes go back to the coalition to give to somebody else, or how does that work?
No, we aren't planning on retaining any of those. And some, I think from what we understand, and again, we're hearing it from other realtors, that people don't think about that. You know, when I was showing my house for sale, I didn't think about cleaning out my medicine cabinet. And it's not just people like realtors, but you go to grandma's house and grandma hasn't locked up her stuff, and you know, kids want to try something. So this is the kind of stuff we handed out several at the fair with people talking about those kinds of issues.
Is it a big box? I mean, I guess I've never even seen one. I don't know what.
Yeah.
So what keeps somebody though from stealing the whole box?
Well, they
I
mean, have.
I guess
to,
I'm just asking.
No, you're right. Question. No, you're right. They would obviously show that they're walking out with the box.
I think it's rather than out of sight, out of mind, too.
Yeah.
You don't see it. You don't know what there is to steal. I mean, I know you think
you can throw something in your pocket, a pill box. It'd be a little harder to take a box like that out. Is it going to save everything? No, of course not.
Okay, I was just curious what the boxes
were.
Yeah, people don't think about it.
People don't think about
showing the house. You know, people have
turn your mic on, Mike.
Drugs on the counter, and I go through and move all that stuff to secure it, put it in their car until it's over with.
We'll get you a lockbox. Sure. We'll get you a couple.
Any other questions? We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Thank you, guys.
Jack, do you have anything else?
Nope.
Okay. I think we're ready to adjourn.
Oh, Hilda? I have something else to say.
I'm shocked.
Surprise. I wanted to just make an announcement that I have sent on behalf of the Prevention Coalition, which I chair, the Narcan, a request to all the superintendents and schools in our county to ask nurses in their schools to be trained, and we will train them and provide Narcan samples, Narcan at every school. And so far I've gotten two responses back. Both said, absolutely, we want to have it. And I'm hoping that we'll get the rest of them. We have somebody who's trained them, and we will provide the Narcan because we can access that. Part of it is from our peer advocate. And so that's a huge effort for us because it's not just for the kids. We're also talking staff. We also are very active, and I say us, I say the DA, the sheriff, Colleen, who is the program director, going out to all the municipalities to talk about opting out of dispensaries, marijuana dispensaries. I'm sorry, because the new term is now adult cannabis. That is the way that they're calling marijuana, because it just sounds so much nicer. Mm-hmm. So we have gone, sheriff had a session last week where a number of municipalities came and listened to all of us talk. We have some meetings coming up in the next week with Hornell and with City of Corning, and I think some more municipalities. So I wanted you just to know that that's an effort that it isn't county sponsored, but we are sponsoring it ourselves.
Okay, we don't have a motion.
What you're doing, Hilda, is to have in your municipality so they can't sell weed, right?
Correct. They, if you don't opt out in your municipality, you're automatically opting in. When you opt in by the end of the year, you can't get out. If you opt out and you see that there's this huge, you know, revenue source, which we all doubt is going to happen, you can opt back in. But if you opt in, you are not opting out.
Hilda mentioned it, but just for the record, you folks as a legislature hasn't taken a position on what your opinion of what municipalities should do in terms of opting out or opting in. We've had that conversation about, you know, the sheriff and the DA, obviously independent elected officials, and meeting with municipalities is all good, but we have to be careful about speaking for the county, because the county, you folks, have not taken a position. Just want to get that on the record. Just
to add to this, can counties opt out so the whole county can't sell? Okay.
Under the legislation, we have no authority.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I say that about the Narcan as well. When I sent the message out to all the superintendents, I made sure and clear that it is not a county initiative. It's our initiative from the Prevention Coalition. So we're trying to make sure everybody understands it is not county driven.
John?
Yeah. So do we know at this point where the legislation is at and when people can apply for these licenses or for the distribution?
The board actually just met yesterday for the first time. So I would expect more guidance to come in the next month or two, probably. The first thing they did yesterday was expand timeframes for physicians to prescribe medical marijuana. Instead of 3 months, they expanded it to 6 months. I think that was the only change they made yesterday from what I saw in the news.
Yeah, and I agree. I saw the same thing, Jack, and we've been trying to pay attention to it because of inquiries from you all. I mean, it's just not quite as simple as people think as far as open a dispensary. I mean, it has to be in an area that was targeted by the drug laws. We've already been through that process here recently and trying to find an underprivileged area, and we didn't have any that met the criteria for the state on another issue. So, I mean, it has to be in an area that's been hit by drug laws. It has to be, I believe the last time I saw is you get one dispensary per 50,000 people.
50,000 residents.
Yeah. So at most we'd be looking at two. I think that, you know, it's unlikely we have an underprivileged area that was targeted. You're going to see more in urban areas from way the regs are coming out on this.
And the cost of licensing is
200,000 plus for a license to just start. Dispensary. So there's some things that are coming out, but kind of piecemeal. But that's where what we've got for now.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I just wanted to say, if any of your town supervisors are interested, they're actually having a thing at Turning Stone on October 28th and 29th for town supervisors. And the way the law is written, Hilda is exactly right. It just says if you don't opt out by the 31st, you're automatically opting in. So just.
And the time frame is short now because you have to have a resolution, a public hearing, and have it all voted by the end of the year. And it's tough.
It requires a local law.
Yeah.
So that's at least a 2-month turnaround time.
The fact that the sheriff and the DA have taken this on themselves to go around and educate towns without any indication from the legislature on where we stand. I mean, does that add any sort of liability or any legal issues from the county?
On the county's behalf, I sent an email to both of them before mm-hmm. the meeting, advising that the county has not taken a position, that it's not a county issue, and that after speaking with the chairman and Jack about this, that any position they'd be taking would be as elected officials and not on the county, and they have that email.
Okay.
And they stated that when they had their meeting.
Yes, I asked them to
they make did. That clear. They made it very clear. And it's really, we spurred it on. The Prevention Coalition helped to spur it on and to get these, the two agencies together to get this started. Prevention Coalition and the Opioid Committee.
Okay.
Any other questions? Do we have a motion to adjourn?
I'll move it.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you.
When is that event that you guys get together?
I already had it. Yeah. Oh, with Hornell, the 18th.